Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy New Year's Eve, everyone, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. It is the sixth and final installment of our special 2015 Political Year-End Awards. And today we end with the three most prestigious Crystal Martinis: Person of the Year, Turncoat of the Year, and the New Year's Resolution. So I guess we get our own martinis for the third one. But on to the Person of the Year. And for me, it's People of the Year, but they're all related to the same story, Jim. And one of the big stories that kept popping up throughout the year, unfortunately, were the number of excruciating mass shootings. Maybe not the number that the left has been touting, but nonetheless, too many, whether at schools or churches or terrorist attacks in San Bernardino. And one in particular was at an AME church in Charleston, South Carolina, where an obviously deranged person who was very likely a racist went to a Bible study on a Wednesday night, sat through the Bible study, or at least a lot of it, and later said that he almost didn't kill a bunch of people there because they were so nice to him. But he killed, I believe, nine of them anyway. One of them lived. And ultimately, he was caught quite quickly and arraigned in court there in Charleston. And one of the most amazing things happened at that arraignment because family members of the victims were allowed to make statements. I don't know if that's all that common at an arraignment. Usually it's at sentencing or something like that. And the vast majority of those family members, who, by the way, also shooed away Al Sharpton, and I don't think too many of them got involved in the debate over Confederate history or anything like that, but one by one they got up to that podium in that courtroom and talked to the killer, who I believe was on video connection, and not only talked about the devastation that he caused their families, but one by one, the family members of people in that church forgave that killer. That's one of the most amazing things you will ever see, and it shows just how real the Christian faith is in those families and the people who were at that Bible study on that Wednesday night. It's amazing to watch family members of all shootings try and struggle with the grief and move on and often comfort others who are trying to comfort them. But to really put shoe leather to your faith in the most difficult circumstances imaginable and not letting the hate eat you up is the most amazing godly response you can possibly do. And in a horrific, horrific story, their attitude trumped the hate of the killer and is an amazing model for all of us.
You know, Greg, that was a fantastic selection, and you really took the high road, which is going to make my selection look really snarky and snide. And thanks a lot, pal. So sometimes you'll see when it comes to Times Person of the Year, they'll go with a group of individuals that kind of encompass a particular theme. A couple years back, they did the whistleblowers, for example. So I kind of went with three figures who I think represent exactly what the country needs at this tumultuous time. 7 years of President Obama have steered the country far to the left, and we have crashed on the rocks. We're economically stagnant. Our federal bureaucracy is bloated and unresponsive. We're depressed and living in fear. We need a right combination of principled conservatism and a serious record of reforms with firsthand knowledge of how to steer a government away from the left and to the government's true priorities. And this year, Greg, I felt three men best exemplify the change we need. Those men are Rick Perry, Scott Walker, and Bobby Jindal. Now, there's this little detail that Republicans pretty much rejected these three. The donor class didn't support them. The poll respondents didn't support them. Only Walker ended up on the big time debate stage, and he was barely, you know, spoken to on those two appearances. And they all pretty much were rejected. But here's the thing. I think that says more about the poor judgment and bad criteria of the party today than it does about these three guys. So since these guys didn't win anything else this year, I decided they'd win my Person of the Year nominations. And that's my to me, that's one of the big stories of 2015.
It was a very big story of 2015 and very well said. It'll be a sadder 2016 that they're not having a more prominent role. On to the Turncoat of the Year. And Jim, this is like 50.1% to 49.9% for me, and it's just so hard to choose one. I very nearly went with Secretary of State John Kerry for his completely horrific representation of the United States throughout this year, from the James Taylor incident after Charlie Hebdo because Obama couldn't be bothered to stop watching NFL football to go to the march, to rolling over on the nuclear deal, to the politically correct response to everything related to ISIS, to the climate deal. And just last week we talked about how he's letting Iran off the hook with the visa waiver program. But not the winner, John Kerry. This might be like a Steve Harvey situation.
Again? Haven't I had that happen to me enough?
The Miss Universe.
I want a recount in Ohio, Greg.
I wish it was John Kerry, honestly, because this one will probably get me in more trouble. This was my New Year's resolution heading into 2015. Let's go all the way back 1 year. Come next week, Jim, Republicans control the Senate, they control the House, and the time for saying just wait till fill in the blank is over. I think conservatives expect a lot of bold initiatives. They expect things to be done, like a full repeal of Obamacare, even though the president will likely veto that, and many other conservative agenda items that have been forced to the back burner because conservatives have been told for a long time that there is just not enough votes and there's just not a political reality that'll make things happen. Okay, back to live. And so they came in January 2015. First major order of business was to get the Keystone Pipeline on the president's desk, which they did. He vetoed it. They couldn't override it. That's going to happen when you got a Democratic president who doesn't like your idea. Then came the time to revisit the Cromnibus and essentially only Homeland Security funding, supposedly without funding for implementation of the president's unilateral immigration actions. The House actually did that. McConnell could not get to 60 in the Senate. So instead of making the Democrats out to be the bad guy, he folded. And ultimately, that funding is still in our spending heading into fiscal year 2016. Then there was the ridiculous Corker-Cardin plan for the Iranian nuclear deal. There was no fight to turn that into a treaty. With the climate treaty, I'm pretty sure at this point, based on the fact that they've decided to fund the Green Climate Fund, they're not even going to fight on that. But I guess we'll see in the new year if there's any action going to happen on that. Efforts to defund sanctuary cities and Planned Parenthood could have been added with a simple majority vote to the highway bill. McConnell ultimately decided to do standalone votes, which meant there had to be 60 votes, which, of course, he knew he couldn't get. And then, of course, there's the omnibus at the end of the year. Boehner and Ryan obviously deserve some blame here as well, certainly. And when it came to Planned Parenthood funding, here's Mitch McConnell's answer for why he couldn't do more in an interview back in Kentucky.
We just don't have the votes to get the outcome that we'd like. Again, the president has the pen to sign it. You know, if he doesn't sign it, it doesn't happen. But yeah, we've voted on that already in the Senate. We'll vote on it again. But I would remind all of your viewers, the way you make a law in this country, the Congress has to pass it and the president has to sign it. The president's made it very clear he's not going to sign any bill that includes defunding of Planned Parenthood. So
he says we have to wait for a president who has a better position on Planned Parenthood. So, Jim, we went from we got to get the Senate, then we can get stuff done. Now we need everything. We need the House, the Senate, the presidency, probably a veto-proof Senate as well, as long as we're in the market for figuring out what we need. For whatever reason, the Democrats are willing to roll up their sleeves and get in the mud and attach things to other bills that that have no bearing on that bill just to advance the agenda. We never have to worry about what they're trying to cram down our throat. But for some reason, things just don't get done from our side.
That's a really good choice. And obviously, Senator McConnell's office, you can direct all mail to Greg Columbus at Radio America. So I went in a slightly different direction. It's a little more recent in the year, but it's a more potentially long-term problem for the conservative movement. A question of who do we decide to choose as our leaders. You eloquently laid out all of the problems with relying on your longtime Kentucky senators to be your leaders, but let's go in the other direction. Dear conservative media, and I include friends in the conservative media, I don't care that you found a teenager who says conservative things. I don't care if they're particularly eloquent. They're teenagers. They're not supposed to be dragged into the dog-eat-dog world of politics. And teenagers are stupid and fickle. And I know this, Greg, because I was once a stupid and fickle teenager. And chances are, so is everybody listening to this. So why would some of us conservatives choose to take somebody like this kid, C.J. Pearson, and turn him into a spokesman for the conservative movement overnight? Because this is the sort of thing that happens. Not long ago, C.J. Pearson is this 13-year-old conservative, quote, social media sensation, who talked about all of his support for Ted Cruz. Joins the Cruz campaign as this, you know, high-profile volunteer on September 8th, leaving his position, concluding that Cruz isn't doing enough about student loan debt and youth unemployment. And a short while later, he announces he's supporting Bernie Sanders. Now, let me be clear. CJ Pearson is not the turncoat in my turncoat of the year. To me, the turncoat is the year all the people who thought a teenager should be a political celebrity because they turned their backs on the value of experience and everything we know about human nature and teenagers. So, you know, conservative movement, I expect better of you. This is a stupid idea. We don't need teenagers. It's not all that amazing. We found a teenager who says conservative stuff. Let the kids be kids. Don't shove them up on the stage at CPAC and turn them into celebrities because you know what? They're going to meet a girl and they're suddenly going to change their minds on everything. Yeah. No, it's the case with Pearson. I'm just saying that's what teenagers do.
So. Yeah. Don't elevate them. Get them a copy of Heavy Lifting.
That'll do. Or you know, like Milton Friedman or, you know, anything. You know, Rush Limbaugh is the way things ought to be. Any of this stuff. You know, teenagers don't know anything. Hey, this person who's never studied anything. So anyway. You can feel the rant going here. Yeah. Get off my lawn, kids.
Exactly. All right, on to New Year's resolutions. These are obviously things we're hoping to change or do better in 2016. Definitely hoping to exercise more, eat a little healthier. That's pretty standard. As far as politics are related, trying to pace ourselves for 2016, realizing that a lot of people don't pay attention, but at the same time, making sure, Jim, that we don't get rid of our conservative bona fides in order to jump on the train that appears to be ahead on the tracks. There is a leading candidate for the Republican nomination who, and people are going to hate this too, is not a conservative. He's just not. He never has been. And I think he's reading the population and understanding what they're frustrated about and deciding to get out in front of their train. So we will see what happens here in the next few weeks as the real votes actually take shape. But sacrificing conservatism for the sake of success has never been a long-term success strategy, and hopefully it doesn't happen again in 2016.
I think it's a really good choice there, Greg. Once again, all angry email can be sent to Greg Columbus. mine is kind of on that same theme, although I think there's been an interesting lesson of the last 2 years, maybe even heading back to 2012. For the starters, the past 2 years have shown that polling, even polls of likely voters held shortly before Election Day, can be wildly off base. Saw it in the 2014 midterms, saw it in the Kentucky governor's race this year. Greg, I want to see things more firsthand in 2016. I feel like we get things through filters. Rumors, disinformation, half-truths, they get around the web and around the world faster than ever before. There were a couple times in the past year, not a lot, but a couple of times where I wrote something based on a report of, you know, oh, this political figure said X. Then you go and listen to the audio, and it's very different, or it's out of context. I think Ryan Lizza of the New Yorker, who's usually a pretty good reporter, no conservative, but you know, he had some of Jeb Bush had said stuff happens in regarding to school shootings and stuff like that. And you look at the comments in context; it was definitely not the way Lizza made it sound. So I think we need to be a little more careful about these things. Like I need to be a little more careful about these things. I think we're seeing a bit of a breakdown in the way the media does its job and that desire to chase the clicks, chase the traffic, chase the attention, the shock value is really getting in the way of accuracy. So I want to remain committed to accuracy. I want to make sure I don't end up chasing something that's not true. I want to make sure I use appropriate skepticism and only trust what I see firsthand. Since there's so much people out there who want to shape perceptions and spin them to things that they are not. So I'm going to try to stay in reality in 2016, and we'll see how that shakes out for let's see how it shakes out for us, Greg.
Jim, we all know your New Year's resolution is to foster a broker convention where Bobby Jindal ends up as the nominee somehow.
Shh. By the way, people are like, Jim, you're such a Jindal fan. Who are you going to have as his running mate? The cloning project is underway. We're going to register him in a different state.
Very good. 2015 is in the books. Jim, we'll talk to you on Monday in 2016. Happy New Year.
See you Monday, Greg. See you next year.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Columbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.